Welcome to the Morning Show, Wednesday edition, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Who's going to be with us today? Corey Curtis, sports director, News 2. How are you, sir? My name's Braden Gall, by the way.
Hey, Braden. Nice to meet you.
Oh, wait.
You were introducing yourself to the audience.
Good to see you, sir.
I'm awesome.
Might as well be introducing myself to my co-host every morning. Good to see you, Corey. How are you?
I haven't slept in like 3 weeks, so why should today be different? Let's do it.
Well, and until John Robinson and the Titans name a coach, you won't get to sleep. So,
well, you know, I mean,
such is life in our industry, sir.
The nice thing is like the moment it went down, because we all expected it to kind of go, well, not all of us, most of us expected it to kind of go down this way. They've got to do interviews. They have to.
Yep.
And so I know I've got a few days.
So we'll get to a lot of Titan stuff, because obviously the coaching search will command this show and most every other piece of media content in this city until the Titans do find a new head football coach. So we'll get your thoughts on how it all played out. Mike Golic Jr. going to join us. We got a stacked show today. Darren Gant going to join us from Pro Football Talk. John Kincaid, any reason to bring John Kincaid on the show from 680 The Fan in Atlanta, one of our favorite guys in the business. He'll give us some insight into a couple of the coaches that are of note in this coaching search. As well, John Harris, the Texans analyst, going to join us from down in Houston, going to give us also some insight. We're going to dive deeper into a lot of the coaching candidates today, spend some time digging into the process of the search for the Titans. Does the timing of this all hurt and all that good stuff? Also, of the newish names that we're talking about, a lot of the names that have not been head coaches yet, who do we like out of those groups? So we're going to dive a little deeper and maybe – You have a chance to get to know some names like Mike Vrabel and Matt LaFleur and John DeFilippo and hear some of the backstory and where these guys come from and that kind of stuff. But let's start on a fun, lighthearted, positive note. How about that, Corey?
Let's do it.
1-0 victory in a playoff-style win for the Nashville Predators last night. A shutout for UC Saros, 4 billion saves, which I think is an NHL record last night. The first star of the game was absolutely excellent.
First Preds goalie with 240 save shutouts in a season. So there is a record there.
So my tongue-in-cheek 4 billion saves was not giving him enough credit, actually.
No, it was fantastic. You know when a goalie is dialed in, and he was dialed in.
Well, and Lavi had some interesting thoughts on why they started UC Saros last night. I think probably lots of Preds fans fascinated to see that Saros got the start after so much time off and rest, but the rest might actually be the reason Pekka-Rinne didn't start. So we'll hear from Peter Laviolette in just a second. However, Victor Arvidsson placed on IR, also big news last night. And so we start the game last night. Ryan Johansson's on the line there with Colton Sissons and Callie Yarncrook at the top of the line. So Jofa is now just Jay.
Yeah, that doesn't have the same ring to it.
And by the end of the second period, after a shot to the chin by Carrier, the one of the Vegas Golden Knights players, catches Ryan Johansson with a shoulder to the chin without Johansson doesn't see it coming. His eyes are closed when he hits the ice. Yep. The stick goes flying. He does not return to the game. It looks very clearly like a concussion/head injury. You don't want to speculate, but that's
I think we're all right there.
It's pretty clear what happened. He's kind of shaking off the cobwebs as he skates off and he never comes back. So all of Jofa not playing for the Nashville Predators in the third period last night.
Yeah, you play without your complete first line. I guess you don't have to piece lines together that way. You just kind of elevate everybody up a spot. But, I mean, to win that game without your three big guns is a good victory. Now, they got outshot, obviously, and relied on some goaltending big time. And then Kevin Fiala, is this a guy who just scores big goals? I mean, he scores another big goal set up by PK Subban, who's having a great year. So they've had to mix and match some things.
He almost missed the wide open net again, which he's done this season, but he buries it, and a great play. They actually had a lot of good scoring chances last night. I thought better scoring chances than Vegas. Vegas outplayed them in the first period. You could tell that the first period was a little bit slow for the Preds. And we've seen this.
After 5 days off.
We've seen this from the bye week, is that while it helps you in the long run, it doesn't necessarily help you in the short run. And Vegas sort of came off its bye week and already had a game under its belt. And these are obviously two of the best teams in the Western Conference. So I think it's important for the Predators' psyche to have won that game the way they did, not only without their three best offensive players, arguably, their top line not there, because, again, Ryan Johansson leaves after the second period. No idea what the future holds for him. I mean, obviously, Arvidsson placed on IR, so he'll miss at least two more games, although it seemed like he tried to give it a go Tuesday morning at the morning skate, so it doesn't seem like – it seemed like they maybe escaped a serious injury there, and Forsberg's probably two and a half, three weeks away from coming back. So you're going to be without those guys for a little bit, and to get a win over Vegas, I think, you know, first season series with the team, the best conference, the best record in the conference, I think there was a mental hurdle. So now you're 1-1-1 against a team instead of 0-2-1 or 0-1-2. Like, it feels better, I think, when you look across the standings and you see Vegas.
Well, also, this is a team that scored a lot of goals, and you pitched a shutout on them. And I think there's definitely something to that. You know, holding that team down is impressive. And doing it without your first line, you know, because let's face it, that Preds first line spends a lot of time in the offensive zone. And when you replace all those guys, that's going to cost them puck time. And you still hold them in a shutout.
And you could tell, too, that they missed Forsberg and Arvidsson last night. And then without Johansson, it was an excellent third period. And as you mentioned, Fiala with the big goal. And Austin Watson's play with his skate. And he two saves, essentially, in the crease behind UC Saros, probably the play of the game defensively. Austin Watson is just one of those guys. I believe Toothless Wonder was the nickname last night from C-Mace. So the Toothless Wonder doing excellent work. But the star of the show was very clearly UC Saros. And as we said, probably a lot of fans saying, well, wait a second, Pekka just had like 7 days off. Why isn't Pekka playing? There was an interesting comment from Lavi after the game as it pertains to why UC Saros got the start. Here was Laviolette after the game talking about why UC got the start.
You know, there's a couple points to it. Probably one is that he is getting work so that he stays sharp when he does get the call up here. He's taking pucks in live action. And the second part of it is we want him to continue to develop, want him to continue to play games. If you're sitting and only playing 15 games a year, it's probably not great for your development. So we've just tried to look at the schedule and make the decisions on when it might be best for him to get down and get some playing time. I think, you know, it's worked really well because, and, you know, for this instance, to keep him playing during the break, and he played extremely well down there. We got a goaltender that's been taking shots for the week in live action. He comes back tonight and he plays terrific.
I think it's a fascinating point because they talked about it on the broadcast, like, oh, Pekka's going to need a couple of days to get back into the swing of things. I'm like, wait a second, he just had 5 days off, but you can't actually do any activities. So when you come back, your first practice on Monday is essentially your first work in net for Pekka in almost a week. So there is some rationale there that UC Saros has been with Milwaukee taking live action, and he was in sort of rhythm. And hockey, I find, Corey, very fascinating in its overwork, rest versus rhythm conversation. Like, I find that to be really interesting. Like, you need to be in rhythm, but you don't want to be overworked. And I find that to be a really interesting aspect of a coach's job in the NHL.
Well, you brought it up earlier about how they were slow out of the gate. I mean, if the goalie's slow out of the gate, you're down 2-0.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe that was the thought, that we have a goalie who's in flow while the rest of the team catches up to the flow, and maybe he's good enough to get us through the molasses of getting back from the break. I find it very interesting hearing him talk about emphasizing the development of UC Saros and wanting to get him on the ice, because it gives you a real indication of where this team is headed. You know, maybe not next year, but not far down the line.
Well, next year is Pekka's last year on his contract, so they're going to have David Poile and company is going to have a very, very difficult and expensive decision to make with Pekka Rinne. I would love Pekka Rinne to do the Tom Brady thing and, like, take a really big hometown discount and then just continue to play for the Predators. That may not be in his own best financial interest, but that's like the wishful thinking world of fandom out there is, Pekka, just take like a 1-year deal, you know, make like $3 million a year and, you know, play like 48 games. And he
might be willing, you know, to do that.
Maybe he is.
Maybe he's Jerome Bettis. I mean, we don't know. He likes where he is. I mean, he was the one guy who put his name on the line. You know, that's why Pred fans will always love Pekka Rinne. He was the first guy to choose Nashville. He said, this is it for me. This is my home. I believe in it.
Yep.
And that's what one of the things that makes him special. Now, you know, how old is he now? 35, 36?
36, I believe.
36, and,
yeah.
I mean, so we're going to be getting to a point where next year, how many games do you think he starts this year?
He just turned 35 in November.
How many games is he supposed to start?
I mean,
year?
He's on pace for, I want to say, 62, 63.
Yeah,
okay, so, and you heard Lavi say 15 when you got a guy like Saros only getting 15 starts in a season. It's hard to get development. I'd like to see more. I'd like to see 20 starts.
Yeah, so maybe next
22,
year,
25.
Maybe next year is a 52-30 year, and then you see where you go from there.
Yeah.
I mean, because the number of starts isn't going to get to be more.
No, no. And a guy who's dealt with a major, major injury in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean,
career.
The hip thing was very, very scary.
So the Preds now 3 games in hand with Winnipeg, who still sit 1 point ahead in the Central. So essentially Nationals in first place, basically. I can't imagine them not being able to pick up 2 points in 3 games, especially when you're playing Arizona and Florida next. So they're back on the ice Thursday and then back on the ice at home on Saturday. And then, of course, the best team in the league, the Tampa Bay Lightning, come into town next Tuesday. So this whole team, coaching staff and players included, they knew about this stretch and needed to get it started right. Got it started right last night, despite losing Ryan Johansson to what appears to be a head injury there, concussion, cobwebs, bell rung, whatever you want to call it. Also, pure speculation on my part there, just pretty obvious when you watch it what happened. I don't think it was necessarily a dirty hit.
He got something in his eye.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a dirty hit, but it wasn't a clean hit.
So
I'll put it
know,
in the middle there.
I don't know if he intentionally hit him in the head.
Yeah, I don't think he was trying to do that.
But he went high, and he hit him in the head. I mean, you know,
You're responsible for your body.
You are, and you're responsible for your target. And, you know, you watch that in the NFL, and you really see, like with the Titans this year, you could see a concerted effort hitting the quarterback in the belly, lower chest area.
The strike zone.
Yeah, in the strike zone. And look, Carrier, you know, he had no commitment to the strike zone.
No. Nope.
He just dipped his shoulder a little bit and came right in. And if you want to, in any sport that has contact like that, if you truly want to take that out of the game, you have to legislate it out of the game. And you have to punish the guy.
Well, and I think the biggest difference between hockey and football is that the lower part of the... Like, it's one thing to have the helmet protecting you from pucks and the boards and everything. It's your jaw that causes all the damage in the NHL. It's the fact that all of that is exposed and you can catch a shoulder or a helmet or an elbow to the jaw, and that's really what does cause the problems, and that's where Ryan Johansson caught the hit last night. Did not play in the third period. We will see where Ryan Johansson falls. All right, when we come back, Corey, I have not had an opportunity to talk with you on this program about what took place and transpired with Mike Mularkey. I've got an example, though. I want to throw... A coach was asked very similar questions that Mike Mularkey was asked and answered them the way I wanted Mike Mularkey to answer them. I don't know if it would have changed anything, but I want to get your thoughts on this. We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii, brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Corey Curtis from News 2. Brayden Gall here hanging out on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Now, I heard a press conference answer. Now, I'm going to get your thoughts on this in just a second, because I don't know if it was at this point on Sunday when Mike Mularkey was asked a bunch of questions and sort of pressed. And we've talked about this, that I thought he sort of was hurt by his own honesty to some degree in the Kansas City press conference, where he talked about being, you know, getting no support from ownership, and ownership didn't say anything, so clearly he was correct. I thought it was a must-lie situation. I thought on Sunday when he was asked about making staff changes or evolving the offense or whatever you want to ask him and sort of pressed on all those questions, he could have – it was a must-lie situation, and he could have given a non-answer answer. And I thought he chose not to. He dug his heels in. He sort of made his bed. And obviously then he had to lie in it, which, of course, didn't jive with what John Robinson and Amy Adams Strunk viewed. And that's why we are where we are. So let me play something for you, because Mike Tomlin is facing this very strange, bizarre pressure from this small ownership portion of the Pittsburgh Steelers that
which
has
there
no,
are many elements too,
which has and they have no power, so it's it, they yeah. have it's just their opinion.
But nobody owns a 50% stake in the Steelers,
right? But one guy makes all the decisions, yeah. and it's in the and the family's name is Rooney, and so Mike Tomlin is in no real danger. But there are questions about his game management and about his coaching staff, and it feels like Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, is going to be the fall guy for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he's sort of asked about all this stuff in his day after press conference, just like Mike Mularkey was. They lost in the same round of the same conference of the same playoff tournament, and basically was asked similar questions. This was Mike Tomlin's response to those questions.
You know, I don't know where these roads are going to lead. Some conversations need to be had. Some contracts are up, some contracts aren't. I'm not ready to discuss that at this point. Part of that, gaining that understanding, is those conversations and so forth. So you'll hear about them as they unfold, I'm sure, if there's anything to be heard. But not there yet, no.
We're not there yet, and you'll hear about them. I'm not ready to discuss this yet. Mike Mularkey could have said all of those things on Sunday. And had there been just a shred of a possibility of John Robinson and Mike Mularkey getting back together, you know, like the breakup hadn't happened yet, which I'm not saying it might have already been an untenable situation. But if after the Kansas City game and after in the press conference on Sunday following the loss of the Patriots, had Mike Mularkey spoken like that in those two situations, there's a chance that after a week of decompression and kind of like letting cooler heads prevail and reevaluating your own personal stance on things, there's a chance that maybe Mike Mularkey is still the head football coach.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I understand why you're saying what you're saying, and I think a lot of people agree with that. I think the moment the job status got leaked before the Jacksonville game, because it was Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter, Jay Glazer. Are there three bigger heads at three bigger networks that get that information?
There's some leaky pipe somewhere pretty high up in the offices there.
And does that information get leaked if they don't want it to get leaked?
I agree.
Okay, so agree. They want it leaked. They want to create this uncomfortable situation. And to me, at that point, they're headed down a path that is inevitable. Now, from the Mike Mularkey answer aspect, I'm going to tell you from my perception a couple of things here. Number one, I would say he knew he was gone on Monday when they had that meeting. I mean, you know, everybody talked about his tone in that meeting. You know, we chalked it up to tired, but it was a definite down.
It was the most Butch Jones press conference I've ever seen out of Mike Mularkey.
So, but here's what I take out of that, though. This is a guy who hasn't been afraid to make changes in 2 years as Titans coach. He fired Bobby April four games in. Bobby April's one of his best friends on the planet. Bob Bradkowski, wide receivers coach, fired after the first year. Another guy, one of his very best friends. So he's fired two guys who are among his very best friends within a year of taking over the football team. Not afraid to make changes. After his first year, I don't remember the exact answer, but was asked about his coaching staff and got one of those answers along the lines of everything is being analyzed. We'll get to that when we get to that.
Everything's under further review.
I mean,
it's a very easy stock answer.
It was a very soft answer. We're going to figure out what's best for our football team.
Right.
The fact that he was defiant in that, it, to me, is for one reason. He knows he's out the door. He's not going to throw his coaching staff under the bus. He's not going to say they didn't do a good job. He's not going to say that Marcus isn't developing. I'm on my way out. I know this. This is a fact. This is conversation between me and the head coach or former head coach. Very, very proud of what he and his coaching staff accomplished. Taking over one of the biggest dumpster fires in the NFL in the last decade and winning 19 games and getting to the second round of the playoffs. Won more games in 2 years than they won in four before that. And I understand why he would have hurt feelings. I understand why he would feel like, if we're going to make changes, this is my staff. I'll be the one to make them. And tell me another coach who has had his coaching staff dictated to him, who has been told, you will make this change, and has accepted that. No coach accepts that, because you cannot be neutered in the eyes of your players. If the players know you are not in charge and you're on that short of a leash, they're not looking at you as the authority. They're looking at John Robinson and they're checking out on you. Coaches have to have that authority. It's why Mike Mularkey left. It's why Mike Munchak left, because they were both presented with an unacceptable situation. The Titans presented him with that situation knowing what the outcome would be. We can't fire this guy. He just won a playoff game, our first since 2004, but we're going to give him something we know he won't take. He wouldn't take it in Buffalo. He's not going to take it now. We want to move on. How do we make it happen? Boom. Hey, we're on to a new head coach.
While I don't disagree with anything you just said at all, I think that's exactly how it played out. It sounds like you believe that it was untenable from the three-game losing streak. That when ownership got quiet and GR and JR got quiet, that there was never going to be a reconciliation there. He has the press conference at the Kansas City game, again, we've litigated this for 2 days now. Once he has the press conference in Kansas City, which is by far one of the weirdest things I've ever seen a head football coach say at any level in a public forum, in a public setting, it felt like that was sort of like his I'm done coup de grace there, but I think they win that game in the second half. So.
I think he checked a big box in his career. I went to the playoffs and I won a playoff game, and I think he hasn't told me this, but I think he knew at that point. I think he knew it was over, and it all felt like it was over. And you know, tone from John Robinson those last few weeks was very strange. This is a guy who practically cried going off the field after they beat the Denver Broncos his first year. And there was not a whole lot of happy celebration from him beating Jacksonville and beating Kansas City. There was still this level of dissatisfaction that you could feel and level of tension around the team that you could feel at a time when you felt like they should have been the most united and most happy because they were achieving something that 24 months previously seemed like it was a decade away.
And all of that is true, and it all still may not mean that Mike Mularkey was the right guy to take them to the next level, which also could be true too. So that's the other side of this coin,
which I say just fire him then.
Right.
And just fire him, just get it over with.
Yes, and so that's why it happened so quickly after the Patriots loss is very, very quickly at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. It was announced and it was done. Mike Golic Jr., we still got a ton of stuff to discuss about this. Mike Golic Jr. going to join us. We'll talk about how coaches handle all of this stuff in front offices and all that good stuff with Gojo. We'll talk with him when we come back. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Mike Golic Jr. joining us here from ESPN. Gojo, thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time, man. We appreciate it. How are you this good morning, sir?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
So I heard you guys talking about it this morning, and I just played the audio. The Mike Tomlin, you know, non-answer. Have we reached an age where just – Like we obviously love coaches when they're honest, and then we hate them when they're honest. Have we reached an age where you just have to, like, everything's a must-lie situation for an NFL head coach?
I think more often than not, especially when it comes to the sensitivity of other coaches' careers, I think that's one area that coaches are always, even in this age of honesty, going to be hypersensitive about, just because they've all been there. Every coach who's been around the profession long enough has been let go and had to deal with the strain that comes on that for everyone involved. Are the Steelers probably going to go through some changes this offseason? Absolutely. But I think Mike Tomlin wanted to provide that time, sensitivity, and even privacy to something that, again, they all know a little too well to be as upfront about as we might want at certain times.
A change with Todd Haley, though, is something that's been talked about for years. A possible rift between him and the quarterback there, Ben Roethlisberger. So none of this, while it's a talking point in Pittsburgh, none of this is a surprise at this point, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I remember I was in training camp with them in 2013, and that was going into that second season with Todd where you had already heard all of these rumors of strife and a rift. And listen, it never really manifested itself in any meaningful way that I saw going through the offseason and the preseason there, but it's an easy place. We know this is kind of how it works when you start to see the tremors in any sort of coaching staff. The coordinators are usually always an easy spot to go. And for Todd Haley, whose contract is up in a place like Pittsburgh that prizes continuity with their coaches, especially at that head coach spot, you know, Trey Wingo read the stat this morning on Golic and Wingo. There have been more pokes than Steelers coaches since the 1960s. So it has been a place that is usually slow to change, and I don't think is going to seek that change from Mike Tomlin. I think, especially offensively, this is going to be a place that, despite everything they've accomplished, despite even the amount of points they were able to put up on one of the league's top defenses in their loss is still judged on a different curve, because you've got arguably the two best at their position, a running back and quarterback, on your roster for the time being, and this team has fallen short year after year of their standard, which is Super Bowl or bust.
Now, John Robinson has talked about the development of players. We all read that into Marcus Mariota when he's finding his next head coach. So people automatically assume it's going to be an offensive guy. But I point to the Steelers and Mike Tomlin, who is a defensive guy and has still had his offense flourish under him. So that's why that may not be an automatic. One does not necessarily mean the other can't be good.
No, it doesn't. And I think with head coaches, we always make this, I don't want to call it a mistake, but there's a difference between what's expected of you as a head coach and what can actually allow particular units to flourish. And it's still about the people that you put in place. So much of head coaching is about being able to delegate and being able to be a top-end leader. We think that just because you take a guy who's a gifted offensive coordinator or has the ear of quarterbacks and is able to develop them, that putting him in a head coaching position automatically means a net gain for that position room. There's a lot of other things the head coach has to worry about, and it still becomes, all right, maybe he's the one calling plays, but there's still not as much time you can spend day-to-day on the focus of game planning as there is when you are a coordinator. So it's about the importance of who you put in place in those positions, and that's always been something. Mike Tomlin is a great leader in the sense that he finds people that he believes can do the job and puts them in a position and empowers them to succeed in those roles. And I think that's what's going to be most important, is finding someone who's willing to put together a whole staff, not just someone who you can say, well, plays nice with quarterbacks, let's sign him up.
Mike Golic Jr. joining us here. And I think one of the things that is very divisive when we discuss the Tennessee Titans job opening amongst national experts and even local experts is how good really is this roster? There's some people believe that it's really good and set up for success, and some people believe there's lots of upgrading that needs to happen. Where do you fall on that spectrum? How good is this Tennessee Titans roster, and how good can they be moving forward with the new coach?
Well, I look at it relative to some of the other jobs that we've seen open up. And when you look at certain rosters around the league that are open, and I know a lot of it's been made because of some of the other coaching positions opened up, but when you look at Tennessee relative to, let's say, Arizona or Detroit or Indianapolis, I think it's right up there with Detroit in the fact that you've got certainty at least at the quarterback position for right now, and you've got enough talent in other places. I mean, what's been in vogue in the league is investing in the offensive line, and Tennessee's done a really good job of that. And I mean, with the coaches that they've had between the head coaching spot and then having Russ Grimm, one of the all-time greats, as the line coach, I think you've done a good job of developing and trying to make that an area of strength. You've been able to get pressure on defense with the front four. That was one of the reasons that people tried to give Tennessee a chance against New England, because of that ability to potentially harass Tom Brady. So I think there are areas where you're close. I think they've tried to upgrade talentless, and there's no question. You've got talented backs. You've got a talented line. You tried to bring, draft Corey Davis and improve some of that receiver room. There is definitely talent on this roster to be had. And I think that was ultimately the frustration with Mike Mularkey, is that it just didn't feel like you were maximizing what was already a lot of strength in certain areas.
Real quickly, the question that's going to be thrown around here, what does Marcus Mariota need? In your eyes, what does he need?
Marcus Mariota, a healthy offseason. I mean, we saw what a difference it was this year for a guy who had to deal with it. And that's always the one thing you can't stress enough with guys, especially when you get injured late in the year, is it so drastically affects where you're preparing, because you're just trying to get back to base level. Your goal is to go in every day and attack your rehab like it's the only thing in the world. And it can be lonely. Sometimes it leaves you separate from the team in a lot of avenues. And so that can stunt growth for a young quarterback who's looking to make leaps and bounds. So I think whoever comes in, it's getting in with Marcus right away, giving him a chance to fully engross himself in whatever the terminology is going into the offseason, the offensive philosophy, and then just continuing to not only maximize those things structurally, but find a coach that's willing to work with what Marcus does well. And he does so many things well. We saw that show up late in the season after a lackluster year, is the intangibles and the natural ability that Marcus brings, especially when he's improvising, shining brightly. So you've got to continue to find a guy that's going to put him in positions to succeed the way he's already shown you he can.
Gojo, always a pleasure, man. Love talking with you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes of your time, bud.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Mike Golic Jr. there from ESPN. When we come back, Corey Curtis, Braden Gall here, I'd like to I'd like to dive into some of these candidates. We'll get to the new, fresh names a little bit later on. But when we come back, head coaching experience. How important is it? And are there names on this list that that intrigue you? And should the Titans and JR go this direction? We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to 102.5 live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Corey Curtis, sports director, News 2, Braden Gall, Julian Council producing, of course. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a second, as some people already want to chime in on the coaching candidates for the Tennessee Titans. And we're going to dive into some of the quote-unquote, and I'm calling them like the new guys. They're names that people don't necessarily all know. They're not names without head coaching experience. And it feels like they're the names that are getting the most attention from John Robinson and the Titans, the Steve Wilks of the world, the Mike Vrabels of the world, the Matt LaFleurs of the world, three names that we've seen reported out there that will be interviewed by the Tennessee Titans. So we'll get to those guys in a second, and I want to get, Corey, your thoughts on who your favorite is in all of those names. But first I want to sort of go down the list of the experience, because I've heard a lot of people say, I want head coaching experience, and I understand why. That makes sense. Mike Mularkey had head coaching experience. We can go round and round and round on whether or not it worked out or not. He certainly did a good job, but he's not here anymore. So we got to move on from that. The only name, and it would be the number one name on the list, and I've said this for weeks now, regardless of the priority of the qualification, whether offense, defense, personality fit, whatever the priorities are for John Robinson in making a decision. I throw that all out the window. The number one candidate, regardless of all those priorities, for me, has been and always will be Bruce Arians. If you can hire Bruce Arians, I hire him and give him whatever he wants financially today, tomorrow, and yesterday. I would do that. Bruce Arians would be my guy. That is technically a retread. That is technically a name that didn't work somewhere else. I don't know, didn't work is the right phrase maybe, but stepped away from the Cardinals for various reasons. Bill Belichick is a retread. Pete Carroll's a retread. You know who else is a retread, though? Scott Linehan, Jim Schwartz, Jack Del Rio, John Fox, and Greg Schiano would all be technically retreads as well. So for every time someone says, hey, I don't want an NFL retread, and they come back to you with, Bill Belichick was a retread.
I say that.
You say, there are 15 other dudes who failed. So for every one Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick, there's a lot of bad guys.
Probably should take John Fox out of there. He had one bad tenure in Chicago, went to Super Bowl in Carolina and Denver.
Well, either way, I mean, I'm just commenting on retreads. So the point is, do you have a problem with any of those names? Do you have a problem with a quote-unquote retread? Do you have a problem with guys that have recently been removed from jobs and sort of going down the same path as the Mike Mularkey path? Where do you value head coaching experience?
Well, I mean, I think it's important, but I this will sound very noncommittal of me. I evaluate each guy individually. And I meet a guy, and if he's a match, he's a match. You know, whether he has 10 years of head coaching experience or he only has 4 years, I think like Mike Vrabel, as an assistant in the NFL. If I meet that guy and I see what I need to see, ultimately, because, I mean, Mike Tomlin was a positional coach, wasn't he? John.
Well, he was the Vikings DC, I believe.
What, for
right?
1 year then?
Yeah. So very similar to Mike Vrabel.
Yeah,
in
okay.
That sense.
John Harbaugh was a special teams coach. You know, it's seeing those traits. And a name that I throw out from the college ranks, Pat Fitzgerald. I mean, this is a guy who took over really young at Northwestern, but just he was the right guy at the right time, and it's been the right guy for that school. And I think, you know, you have to know what you need in a head coach. And that's why, like, when I look at the Titans and I say, who's a guy who could do really well? And I go, you know what? Jim Harbaugh could do really well.
Oh, heck yeah.
And then
you wouldn't want to be around him at all.
Yeah. And that's why I say he wouldn't work here. He wouldn't work in this organization. Wouldn't. He wouldn't work. But he would be a good head coach here. He would win a lot of games, I think. And so you go, okay, there's a guy with head coaching experience. There's a guy who could win, but it wouldn't last. So you got to kind of cross that off the list and move on.
Like Hugh Jackson wouldn't win the press conference, but I think is a good quality offensive mind. He also has 0-16 on his resume.
And 1-15.
Which is hard to argue. You know, like, there's hard to argue with some of those things. I don't, does anybody, and so Julian, you brought up John Fox. Is that a name that you think is a viable candidate and could be successful here, or is that...
No, I'm just saying, like, you're putting him in the list of retreads when I don't think he belonged in the list because he's actually had success as a head coach. Just outside of what you have in Chicago.
But if you've been a head coach, you're a retread.
Yeah. Right.
That's just all there is to it.
He's also been fired a couple times.
Other people we put in the list were, like, not exactly the most successful, even though Jack Doyle had, like, one good year down there.
Jim Schwartz took a team from 0-16 to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been varying degrees of success and failure.
It just means that he was higher achieving than the other guys there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's all I was pointing out.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
and I would put Bruce Arians at the top of that list.
Hey, Bruce Arians is a great head coach. You're not going to get me to argue Bruce Arians as an offensive mind, and as a head coach, and as a leader of men. I mean, when you look at that leader of men thing, Bruce Arians checks that box,
and he's damn cool on the sideline,
and he's got great hat gear.
So, I mean, this is my honest question, though: is other than Bruce Arians, which we all agree is a great fit and would be an awesome hire, and we all. You know, he probably with the health concerns, we have no idea if he even wants to coach anymore. The question is, are there any names on this list, including John Fox and including the bad names on this list? All of the names that are on this list of former head coaches that qualify as quote-unquote retreads, is there a name that intrigues you? Is there a name that you think would be able to hit that tiny target that is above Mike Mularkey that takes the Titans to the next level?
You're just talking about the retreads, the former
head coaches? Just guys with head coaching experience in the NFL that fall into that category of candidate.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. None of those guys excite me from that aspect. Like I said, Bruce Arians is the one former head coach that I would look at and say, when you look at the development of the quarterback, you know, and the development and maximizing potential of players, that he would be the guy that I would point to say he could take him to the next level. There are guys that are assistants that excite me that I don't think they're necessarily going to get, but that I like.
And I think if you went to ask the same question about college head coaches, there's plenty of guys that would excite me. I don't think any of them are necessarily interested. I mean, if you told me David Shaw or Jim Harbaugh or, you know, Chris Peterson or Urban Meyer or, you know, whatever, some of these guys that are all the biggest names that you hear mentioned, Brian Kelly gets mentioned. A lot of those guys I don't think fit personality-wise. I think Brian Kelly and Jim Harbaugh in particular are too abrasive to come to Nashville and work here. But all of them are very, very good head football coaches with head coaching experience. Do any of them translate to this job at this town at this time with this skills, you know, this quarterback? And I don't think – I think David Shaw would. I think he's a guy everybody would love to be around. I think he's proven that he's an excellent head football coach. He's got head coaching experience. Is he going to leave his alma mater to come coach for the Tennessee Titans? I have no idea. So in the head coaching category, I actually think the best answer other than Bruce Arians might actually be a college coach. But I don't think any of those guys are necessarily interested in the job.
From a head coaching perspective.
From just a guy with head coaching experience perspective. Because now when we come back, I want to take a break. Because now I want to get into the candidates that feel like the sweet spot with which John Robinson is aiming.
Yeah.
Which is, who is the next guy? Who is the next star? Who is the rising up-and-comer in the NFL coaching world that is this next guy in this line of Sean McDermott's and Sean McVay's and Kyle Shanahan's? Who is the next guy in that list? And we'll take your calls on that, and we'll get, Corey, your favorites, and you'll get my opinion. There's one name that I think is possibility that would be at the top of that list for me personally, and we'll do that when we come back, and we'll get to know some of these guys right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.